Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, January 27th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is 34 degrees, overcast, and about to be a pretty snowy weekend here in upstate New York. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Wearables, Biodata, AI, Mental Health, Robot Friends, and China. We talked about all kinds of things. There are wearables out there now, just as we have been postulating, that can not only take a look at what is going on with your health, but also with your emotional health. We have dug into some of these new ways of diagnosing mental illness, utilizing biostatistics and biosensors, whether they be on your body or even utilizing something such as your voice. China is really getting into the game now, utilizing artificial intelligence to back end a lot of their moving forward into this 21st century medicine, big data meets dashboard world that we are moving into, to be able to bag tag and monitor everything that is going on as we all become part of the Internet of Everything. Today, I'd still like to continue on AI. We were looking at the brain and AI, deep learning, mental illness, and applications now that are going to be our new doctor smartphones. We're going to try to top this off today. This has been a couple weeks that we have been going down this path, and I actually have stories here that have been queued up for about 2 months that we're finally going to work into the big picture. So we know that Google and IBM are pretty far in this game of being able to monitor your health. IBM is really big with Dr. Watson doing oncology and now learning to read genomics and scans and things of that nature. Google's been digging into mental health because they got good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health over there. They are working on ways to find, statistics where they can point to some sort of stats that say, yes, anyone with this sort of reading has this sort of illness versus this reading with that illness. Right now in psychiatry, even though we have the DSM and there's all these listings of symptoms, we find out that a lot of this was never really quantified. I talked about a story that a listener had sent me yesterday all about taking another look at schizophrenia and how the diagnosis of schizophrenia evolved in the DSM and some of the inaccuracies from the very beginning that had occurred that no one has ever even gone back to look at or tried to re-diagnose. There are no solid tests that can be done from a biological perspective that they're using right now to do a diagnosis. So, of course, step right up. We got all kinds of new 21st century cures and medicine. Voice is going to be one, like I said. DNA is going to be another. And then, of course, these AI robot doctors that are so damn smart that they can see the smallest deviant from the norm and use that as an early warning sign to alert you to a potential problem in the future. If you guys remember back in December, as the guards were getting ready to change and Obama was inking things left and right just before he stepped out the door, one of the things that he did was gave a speech at Carnegie Mellon University, which is one of the big hubs for AI, as well as a lot of other mad science gone mad research. But he had talked about our future being dominated by artificial intelligence. He'd signed a lot of executive orders furthering these disruptive technologies. He had one for big data. There's all kinds of healthcare, 21st Century Cures Act, right before Christmas. Here's a story from December 20th, 2016. White House report, the future dominated by artificial intelligence brings productivity and inequality. And we have discussed this before. As the robots come to take all the jobs, they're going to have to do something with the people who no longer are employed. One of the big suggestions out there, and now we have experiments happening, I think I saw the other day, in 7 different countries now. As of 2017, this universal basic income, handing you money for doing nothing. And remember, I told you I learned in 5th grade from Mr. Feinauer, there is no free lunch. They're not just going to start handing us checks for sitting around doing nothing. And that number's going to grow and grow as you have places like McDonald's giving free Big Macs in Big Mac ATMs in Boston. I think that's going to be on Tuesday between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. I saw a story about that yesterday. But, I mean, we're seeing that even Carl Jr. was talking about doing kiosks within their stores when they were talking liberals wanted $15 an hour for minimum wage. The CEO of Carl Jr.'s, which I remember, I don't know what happened to him. He had been one of the names tossed out there to be a job czar in the United States, labor secretary or whatever. So I thought that was kind of funny because CEO of Carl Jr.'s was talking about in a knee-jerk response to a $15 an hour minimum wage, he would start automating some of his restaurants. We've seen that there's the robot lawyer Ross, and that is back-ended to IBM Watson. We also have all kinds of positions now that are being lost this year or in the not-too-distant future to artificial intelligence. And a lot of these jobs are going to be white-collar jobs. We have DARPA working on this shape-shifting immune system for the internet. It's going to be able to monitor 24/7 the Internet of Things, which will include everything connected, not just servers, but us and our medical devices and our smart homes and our self-driving cars and our refrigerators. But they are going to create software that will be able to patrol 24/7 without the need of any type of network administrator and fix intrusions and patch holes without any human intervention. Think about that. Network administrator job and technical jobs are going to start drying up. We already have the programming dry up happening with all the outsourcing to places such as India. There's going to be a lot more as AI gets smarter than humans. And there was a story the other day. I actually queued that one up. I mentioned it yesterday. That AI right now is smarter than the average human. And we know through everything that we've studied that this is happening at an exponential rate. So we are already at a level in 2017 that AI is smarter than the average human. Where are we going to be even 5 years from now? And that's something that we need to consider. Back to this article, Future Dominated by AI. From talking speakers to virtual assistants to self-driving cars, artificial intelligence is slowly becoming a part of our lives. You know, it's encroaching. And that's the way they do it, very slowly, getting us comfortable, rolling it out little by little. It all started with our smart devices and becoming dependent on them, pushing that dopamine button, ding, every time you get a message. We can't go anywhere without them. Now, I drove cross country back in 1993, and I never even had a cell phone or air conditioning. Not sure how I did that. Or GPS, mind you. I did it with a map on the passenger seat. You know, people couldn't do that now. We've talked about as we outsource our thinking capability, we read a really disturbing story the other day about artificial intelligence and outsourcing our decisions to the machine so they can look at our day statistically and look at our biology and look at our biostats and determine when's the best time for you to eat, to exercise, to sleep, to take a crap, and to go see your best friend. Just by being able to look at your behaviors and then look at how that corresponds to your biostatistics. Well, Guys, that's in the not-too-distant future. As they are pushing us now with some of this 21st century cures, for all of us to be healthy, put on your Fitbit. Your Fitbit will be able to tell you how many steps you took. And in the future, whether or not, there might be something going wrong through some of the chemicals that we read in your sweat. Time to go see your doctor. Those will be pretty ubiquitous, I believe, as wearables as we move down this path. So anyway, from talking speakers and virtual assistants to self-driving cars, artificial intelligence is slowly becoming a part of our lives. And as progress continues and computer programs are able to perform more human jobs, how can we protect people from being displaced from the job market and from worsening economic inequality that might come from a rapid technological change? Governments are supposed to plan ahead, and the President's Council of Economic Advisors does exactly that. On December 20th, the Council of Economic Advisors released a report with its recommendations for the near future and how the country might be able to use more advanced technology while leaving as few people behind as possible. A job is a set of tests, and most jobs cannot be completely automated. They estimate that while millions of jobs are at risk as AI advances and becomes more pervasive in the workplace and in our lives, the jobs most at risk of disappearing are lower paid, lower skilled jobs. And I am going to argue with that because it looks like it is going to be across the board. You know, Dr. Watson is outperforming boardrooms of 20 seasoned oncologists in diagnosing and coming up with treatments that were never thought of for cancer. Oncologists are very high paid positions. Robot lawyer Ross also is another intelligent white collar job that requires lots of education that makes a good salary. And if Ross pans out well, why would not law firms look at hiring some sort of AI software as a service as a junior lawyer? You know, we also read about HR utilizing artificial intelligence to do interviews and that type of thing. I mean, as they get better and better, looking at micro expressions and these kiosk lie detectors, why would you not pay $29.95 to subscribe to an HR executive software application to screen your employees and save yourself a full-time HR director? You know, a lot of these things can be automated. So I really think that there is going to be a big crisis here. It is not going to be just the Hardee's jobs and McDonald's. It is difficult to make more precise predictions because AI is not a single thing. AI is not a single technology, but rather a collection of technologies that are applied to a specific task. And the effects of AI will be felt unevenly throughout the economy. And remember that Ginni Rometty, CEO of IBM, had said that within the next 5 years, Watson is going to touch every single one of our lives in some way or another. You know, we read, I think it was Monday, even Sears is employing Watson to help give recommendations and add intelligence to the back end of tire shopping at Sears Tire Centers. And remember, people, this is just the beginning. Some tasks will be more easily automated than others, and some jobs will be affected more than others, both negatively and positively. We also saw a while back that they had full-blown accounting that was being done by AI as well, tax preparation and that type of thing. And I mean, it can only get easier for the machine as they gain more and more information. Remember, every time we interact with these devices, they are learning more and more about us and becoming more intelligent as more and more of our behaviors and our statistics go into the database. There is always churn. in the economy and failing businesses close and new ones open and the kinds of jobs that are available locally and nationally gradually changes. But in the case of driving jobs, it could be lost to autonomous vehicles. And remember, it's not just self-driving cars, which eventually with places like Uber and that, Google, and Apple, and Ford, and Mercedes, and probably BMW, and all the other biggies, I think GM as well, they're all working on these self-driving vehicles. Not only is it going to eventually take the place of taxis, like I said, I envision in the future they're going to be a pool of cars. You don't even need to own one anymore. Just push a button on your smart device or your wearable, the big green one that says car, and punch in your time that you need it, and the car will be dispatched whether or not you wave your little wearable bands that has the microchip in it, ba-ding, to pay for it with your qubits, or if maybe there will just be large LCDs all around inside and you can take the free ride that gets a lot of advertising. We also have things since such as self-driving buses. I just saw they started some sort of trial over in Europe the other day. And we have seen self-driving tractor trailers, and they have been now testing that not only in the UK, but I also saw in Vegas. In the UK, they had some sort of convoy with a large number of self-driving tractor trailers. And though tractor trailer over-the-road driving is not considered a white-collar job, it is a good-paying job. And people like that are also going to be looking for work in the future. Taxi drivers, bus drivers that are employed by large regional transit systems, probably some sort of city or county job there. I mean, this is going to be crazy. In the case of driving jobs, it could be lost to autonomous vehicles. For example, not everyone who has a job that includes driving will be put out of work. Though some people currently working as, and this is exactly what we just said, drivers of buses, trucks, and delivery vehicles would still need to ride along. And I think I saw that. There was some delivery vehicle. I think they might have been testing it in like a USPS or FedEx truck or something. And they had the guy sitting in the passenger seat. And the truck, oh, actually it was a tractor trailer. And the truck was driving by itself. I mean, talk about paranoia. I can't even sit in a passenger seat when I have a human driver without slamming my foot on the floor looking for the brake. Could you imagine, like, no one sitting in that seat, the steering wheel's turning, and you're just going, whoa, whoa, whoa. That would not be fun. It would take a lot of getting used to. Anyway, greater productivity drives economic growth, but governments are in charge of looking out for and protecting its citizens, not necessarily their robots. Yes, they're going to keep us safe. The Council of Economic Advisors has some ideas for how to protect individuals and jobs, which include familiar progressive political goals like making sure science, ding, technology, ding, engineering, ding, and math, more affectionately known as STEM education, is available to a diverse range of Americans. And, you know, I was just thinking, too, after this whole policy, and then Obama had some sort of executive order, and then they put out some sort of edict. They, just a week or so ago, all met in, I think it's in Switzerland, like they have it every year, in Davos, had their Davos 2017 conference. Ginni Rometty was there. Actually, let me see how long this is, because I might. It's almost an hour. I just might. One day next week, 56 minutes and 55 seconds, Davos 2017 on artificial intelligence. And there is a panel of four individuals all in the high-tech sector talking about AI and what is coming. And Ginni Rometty is one of them. So I don't know. Maybe we'll do that next week for one of the shows. But they had some long, in-depth discussions as to what that means for the global economy. Here's a story out of Futurism. This also from December, Dawn of AI. Congress is discussing what we will do in a world run by robots. Last week, so this must have been the very end of November, The U.S. Senate Subcommittee on Space Science and Competitiveness focused on the impact AI has on various sectors of U.S. society. Scientists predict that investments in AI will increase by more than 300%. And like I told you, all of these disruptive technologies are going to make bazillions of dollars over the next few years. And that's what it says. It'll increase more than 300% over the next few years, meaning that AI will have a more prominent role in society. Ted Cruz opened up a meeting at the end of November for the hearing of the U.S. Senate Subintelligence Committee on Space Science and Competitiveness with a description of the changing landscape of technology. Quote, "Whether we recognize it or not, artificial intelligence is already seeping into our daily lives," unquote. Senator Cruz explained that scientists are predicting how investments in AI will increase by more than 300%. And with that in mind, the subcommittee's hearing focused on the impact AI has on various sectors of our U.S. society and how best to ensure the U.S. leadership in AI development. The hearing came at a time when developments in computing are giving rise to faster and smarter AI. Dr. Andrew Moore from Carnegie Mellon, ding, and Dr. Eric Horvitz, managing director at Microsoft Research Lab, both stress how increased computing speed, digital data sets, and development of deep learning techniques have created an, quote, inflection point, unquote, for the rapid development of AI. And that's pretty much what has happened. The Trinity has occurred. DARPA, Google, and Kurzweil, they are bringing this together. The singularity is on its way. There is no longer a concern about not having bigger, faster, smarter. It is happening. We have cloud computing. We have cloud computing resources that are just about at an unlimited capacity right now on demand. That's very frightening. And we have this arms race going on, this arms race between technology and science and math to see who could develop artificial intelligence, fast data sets, CRISPR technology, splicing and dicing the genome, curing disease, 21st century cures, biosensors. Everybody is competing because the first ones that get there win the big fat prize of profit. And you and I are going to be the product, and we are going to be the guinea pigs. This is an issue that experts in the field have thought about. It is an urgent need for training and retraining the U.S. workforce so as to be ready for the expected shifts in the workforce needs and in the shifts in distribution of jobs that are fulfilling and rewarding. Ha ha, yes, I'm sure they care about that. Preliminary hearing did not touch much on concrete solutions for solving the looming job crisis, but the conversation could lead to a more public discussion on AI. We are truly living in the dawn of artificial intelligence, and it is incumbent that Congress and this subcommittee begin to learn about the vast implications of emerging technology to ensure that the United States remains a global leader throughout this 21st century, says Ted Cruz. So there you have it, people. And we talked yesterday about China and Beidou doubling down on AI. Beidou now has a senior executive that came over from Google, as well as a brand new executive that came over from Microsoft. And they are getting ready to turn up the heat on us. Back last year or the year before, John Kerry, our State Department dude, Secretary of State, had blocked the sale of a special Intel processor that they had been utilizing to build their newest supercomputer in China. And they were clustering large numbers of these CPUs. I don't remember what the name of that supercomputer was, but it was at the cusp of being the fastest supercomputer in the world. And John Kerry came in and said, nope, you can't buy any more of those Intel processors there, China, because it is all in the name of national security. Well, that did not stop China. This year, China looks to make larger waves than ever in artificial intelligence and augmented reality. And remember, we've been talking about augmented as well as virtual reality. This is going to be the way that they suck us ever further into the machine, our dependence on these devices. Augmented reality, I gotta tell you, is pretty damn cool. If you could collaborate with a team of engineers remotely, standing all in a room, looking all at the same blueprint that you could literally touch with your reality fingers and spin it around and make changes. Hey, you know what? My job as an engineer back in the day would have been a hell of a lot easier than it was when we were using old school, you know, doing Visio diagrams and then emailing them and talking on the phone about it, making changes, sending it back. It would have been pretty damn cool. You could even meet with customers without ever having to get onto a plane. But on the other hand, this merges this separation between reality and the physical world that we all know. This is biology 1.0, and it's going to make it much easier for us to become part of this new quote-unquote evolution of humanity. The people such as Kurzweil have been talking about for a lot of years, this 2.0, this singularity, this merging with the machine, that they are envisioning, and they are in the process of executing right now. The nation's search giant, Baidu, and that is the Chinese equivalent of Google, is leading the charge, already making serious headway in AI research. It now has announced that it is a former Microsoft executive, Ke Liu, taking over as chief operating officer. Liu ran the application and services division at Microsoft. But according to The Verge, a large part of his remit was developing strategies for artificial intelligence and chatbots. And in a statement, Baidu cites hiring Liu as part of its plan to become a, quote, global leader in AI. The race is on, people. Meanwhile, Baidu's chief scientist, Andrew Ng, that's N-G, Ng, has announced, and I think he was the guy that came from Google, that the company is opening a new augmented reality lab in Beijing. Baidu has already made progress in AR using computer vision and deep learning to add an extra layer of real world for millions of people. But the new plan aims to use a 55-strong lab to increase revenue by building augmented reality marketing tools. Though it is thought that the company will also consider healthcare and education applications in the future. Good old Baidu. But Baidu is not alone in pushing forward. Last year, Chinese internet giant Tencent, so that's the first I've heard from them, the company behind the hugely successful mobile app called WeChat, which has 846 million active users, said it was determined to build a formidable AI lab, and it plans to start publishing its work at conferences this year. Similarly, growth is already underway in China's research community. A study of Japan's National Institute of Science and Technology Policy found that China to be close as a second to the U.S. in terms of the number of AI studies presented at top academic conferences as of 2015. And a U.S. government report says that the number of papers published by Chinese researchers mentioning deep learning already exceeds the number published by U.S. researchers, all of which has seen South China Morning Post label AI and AR as must-haves in any self-respecting Chinese investment portfolio. No kidding. This year, it seems, many U.S. tech companies might find themselves looking east to identify their competition. There was another story. This one came out a few days ago. China says its world's first exascale supercomputer is almost complete. Here we go. Like I said, they were getting ready to take the lead in supercomputing, and it looks like Cary's blocking their purchase of processors didn't stop them. If you have never heard of an exascale computer before, you have if you've listened to Before the First Cup. Known unofficially as a supercomputer, don't worry because it doesn't even exist yet. But 2017 could be the year that all changes because China just announced its world's first exascale supercomputer prototype is due for completion in the coming months. And if this thing works as it should, it will be the fastest computer in the world, capable of performing one quintillion, which is a billion billion calculations per second. The country's National Supercomputing Center announced this week that completion of the prototype is way ahead of schedule and is expected to be completed in 2017 rather than in 2018 as originally predicted. It will take another couple years before the finished prototype will be developed into a fully functioning model, but if things go according to plan, it is going to be seriously worth the wait. The complete computing system of exascale supercomputing and its applications can be expected by 2020, and it will be 200 times more powerful than the country's first petaflop computer. And here it is, the Tianhe 1, recognized as the world's fastest in 2010. That was the one that they had had us, but then we beat them again. But it looks like they're about ready to take the lead. Not content to rest on the laurels of its Tianhe 1 supercomputer, China has since developed the Tianhe 2, which in 2015 was then again named the most powerful computer in the world, the sixth time in a row that Chinese supercomputers topped the supercomputing research group's top 500 biannual chart. Most recently, China revealed its fastest new supercomputer, the Sunway Tianhe Lite, hit a peak performance of 124.5 petaflops, making it the world's first system to exceed 100 petaflops. And to give you an idea of how insane an exascale computer is, the Sunway Tianhe Lite is capable of quadrillions of calculations per second. That is 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, guys. Skynet cannot be too far away if it hasn't already appeared. Just think about this. So is AI. And these apps are getting smarter and smarter. Deep learning is getting deeper and deeper. And their understanding of biology is getting more and more minuscule on a DNA level. They're able to run data sets and look at comparisons and connect the dots to all kinds of things. Just imagine that software running on something like this. Like I said, the days of the past where we never had bigger, faster, and smarter don't exist anymore. And just to blow your mind further, quintillion is a number that is usually only used for explaining the mass of Earth in tons or the numbers of molecules in the human brain. The U.S. also has an exascale computer in the works. I think that's a DARPA project, actually. But it doesn't expect its model to be up and running before 2023. But according to the Department of Energy, oh, maybe it's DOE, the exascale computing project will revolutionize the research industry, and they do not use that word lightly. With the top two supercomputers in the world currently residing in China and a new leader reportedly on the way, the U.S. will struggle to beat them in the coming years. It has five in the world's top 10 list, but they are many times less powerful than China's top two. So put on a seatbelt, people, because it is coming. AI and robots taking jobs. People laugh at that. And there's, you know, coming out at these world forums going, nah, don't worry about it. The robots are not coming to take all the jobs. I've literally seen a few stories over the last two or three months that have said that, they are very wrong. Scientists have now built an AI that is smarter than most adults. This is from January 19, 2017. Computers can already hold massive amounts of instantly retrievable data in a manner that puts most humans to shame. But getting them to actually display intelligence is an entirely different challenge. A team of researchers at Northwestern University just made some huge strides toward that goal with a computational model that actually outperforms the average American adult in a standard intelligence test. As phys.org reports, the witty computer system utilizes an AI platform called CogSketch that gives it the power to solve visual problems by looking at them, which is something that traditionally held back many examples of AI. Robot googly eyes, like I said. But being able to visually understand, interpret, and then use the data to come to a solution brings the computer system closer to the functioning of a human brain than many before it. And so the team pitted its creation against a popular standardized test called Raven's Progressive Matrices. The Raven's test, or RPM for short, is comprised of 60 multiple choice questions that measure the taker's ability to reason using visual puzzles. And I remember taking this test, actually. It's all the different squares and certain blocks colored in, and circles with certain blocks colored in. For each series of questions, there are shapes given, and the test that the subject must do is to identify the patterns and then select whichever shape should logically come next. The researcher's AI performed extremely well on the test, placing in the 75th percentile of American adults. And what is more, the places where the AI stumbled are also the spots where human test takers have gotten stuck. That's kind of frightening. So most artificial intelligence research today concerning vision focuses on recognition or labeling what is in a scene rather than reasoning about it. But recognition is only useful if it supports subsequent reasoning. Our research provides an important step forward understanding visual reasoning more broadly. And basically, the day when computers enslave humanity, it says, is just around the corner. You know, people laugh. That was done tongue in cheek at the end of that story, but I hate to tell you, it's not a joke, people. This is not a joke. I am going to predict that within the next 8 years, by the time this presidency is over, we are going to find ourselves in a very precarious position. You know, they are already talking about how wonderful it'll be to outsource our decisions to the machine. Remember, we are puny humans, and our decisions sometimes are bad decisions because puny humans are swayed by emotions where artificial intelligence would not be. And this whole election that happened and the far right swinging into play because they got upset was all emotional. People didn't want to vote for Hillary Clinton. And they have blamed fake news and beliefs and humans' inability to be able to determine truth from untruth or science from non-science was responsible for this debacle, they say, that became the U.S. election. Well, careful what you ask for. Can artificial intelligence solve America's crisis of democracy? Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Regardless of how you feel about the outcome of the election, it is pretty clear that the present voting system is so antiquated that it struggles to provide a meaningful mechanism for translating the will of the people into action. They are already sticking their toe in the water to determine what is best for us as a government. For example, this author was surprised to learn that in this age of cloud storage and wireless connectivity, you couldn't vote at a polling place of your choice and still be presented with a relevant ballot from your home district, and that is kind of lame. U.S. elections are controlled at a local level, which is one reason why the widespread voter fraud, sometimes allegedly, is to exist in practice, almost impossible to achieve. But this same local control makes it difficult to implement the kind of systems that would help voters better understand issues. even ballot design is typically controlled locally and is limited to whatever local officials draw up and their own printers can print. Clearly, there is always modern technology that could improve these processes, and one group is hoping smarter AI could help voters make candidate decisions that better reflect their own goals and priorities. Researchers at Harvard, ding, and Carnegie Mellon, ding-a-ling, have been hard at work devising better methods for collective decision-making using cutting-edge developments in artificial intelligence and machine learning. They devised RoboVote.org, a free public tool that helps people optimize their group decision-making process. Yeah, let's make great group decisions. I really want to be part of the sheeple. The researchers behind this effort, led by computer scientist Professor Ariel Prociana, stumbled upon the idea while working on decision-making software for agents. The aha moment came when he realized that the same toolset could be used to help AI make better decisions, and it could be leveraged to help groups of people make better decisions as well. Their system comes in two flavors. One helps people assess objectively determinable questions such as which company to invest in based upon projected revenue. But the other is intended for questions with subjective valuations such as which toppings a group should order on a pizza that they all are sharing. Oh, yes, how quaint is that? While the first type of question is straightforward, since it doesn't involve people's feelings or options, the other is trickier. And to answer questions involving subjective valuation, the researchers behind RoboVote turn to utility theory. Utility theory presents the concept of the utility-maximizing agent for whom each decision comes with a concomitant cost and benefit. And then they derive a group of individuals' unique utility functions for giving a choice, and you can pull the results and arrive at an equation that maximizes the collective utility of the group. This is conceptually similar to a practice of ranked voting or preferential voting, which allows voters to rank candidates rather than simply choose a single candidate. And in a hypothetical three-way election between Jack Johnson, John Jackson, and Richard Nixon, voters choose their first, second, and third choice. And in the event that no candidate receives at least 50% of the popular vote, the first place votes for the least popular candidate are then redistributed to the other two candidates based on the second place selection of those voters. This AI-based process is a good deal less intuitive than our current voting system. It would need to be an option that people could consult through an election campaign rather than simply at a polling station. And there are questions about how and if users would accept its recommendations as valid, especially if the AI determined that the best candidate for a user to vote for based on their stated goals and priorities was different than the candidate they themselves were inclined to support. But as it's refined and developed further, it could provide a valuable tool for helping voters evaluate candidates, potentially more valuable than the systems we currently have in place. How horrifying is that? So in the future, puny humans, you don't even have the capability of evaluating candidates and what they stand for to even be able to come up with one choice that maybe is the best choice. But don't worry about it, Johnny, because IBM Watson will be able to help you potentially in the future. And so we're running down this path. AI is going all balls out. We have supercomputing to the nth degree. And we find out China's way ahead of the game with big pulsating superhuman brains, super exascale computing on the way. And we're pissing them off in the South China Sea right now. Doesn't sound like a very good plan. Experts predict that by 2040... more crime will be committed by machines than by humans. With the Internet of Things integrating technology into our daily lives more and more, the widespread use of AI could bring with it more AI-powered crime. For the last couple decades, the trend in technological development has been toward maximizing the capabilities of computers and machines to do tasks that people would rather not do, or at least ones that machines could do cheaper. In an interview with Ron Contour, Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer for the Future Laboratory, Tracy Fellows predicts that 35% of jobs currently done by humans could be taken over by robots one day, and these would include jobs that are either tedious or dangerous, saving innumerable hours and, of course, lives. The landmark achievement of the 21st century is arguably artificial intelligence, and with the writing of some strings of code, machines can now perceive their environment, process relevant information, execute actions that provide the highest probability for success. And further innovations in AI are often driven by the elimination of human error in day-to-day tasks. The increased reliance on AI, however, comes with considerable risks, and we have talked about that extensively. AI intelligence, whatever form it may take, is run by a specific set of commands, and this renders it vulnerable to hacking and many other forms of attack and manipulation. And in that same interview, Fellow also predicts that by 2040, more crime will be committed by machines than by humans. And while most machines powered by AI are programmed to do specific jobs, these technological wonders could also be commanded to learn. And we already have seen two examples of that through Google's AI with learning to translate between two languages that it had not learned before and creating its own cipher to do that Rosetta Stone translation. And also, it came up with its own encryption key. And actually, there was another one. There was AI software. So maybe there were three. Their AI software created its own AI software without being shown how to. So it was pretty scary. And exceptionally powerful programs could be wired to learn how to bypass security measures and wreak havoc with classified information, GPS telemetry, sensor input, etc. And that's one thing we have to worry about. Places like China that have computers that are way more powerful than ours that they can put the software on that then goes out and scans all the endpoints out on the internet, starts doing encryption cracking and that type of thing at lightning speeds, at trillions, quadrillions of calculations per second. I don't believe that that is impossible at all. And what's more problematic is that this coincides with the integration of the Internet of Things, the presence of the internet in day-to-day living, and with more devices being retooled to facilitate easier living, we are surrounding ourselves with more ways to be victimized by cybercrime. So look out, because DARPA is already working on that shape-shifting immune system to protect that vulnerable Internet of Everything. Thankfully, the future isn't grim. Ex-FBI counterterrorism operative and present carbon black national security strategist Eric O'Neill is confident that with so much at stake, companies invested in the Internet of Things will act way before an attack even happens, preempting possible hacks or security breaches. He says as the good guys become more active in remediating threats before hackers launch their attacks, espionage and digital fraud will become far less economically beneficial for the bad guys. Well, good thing. So where are we heading? Like I said, we had this unholy trinity that happened back a few years ago. Google, DARPA, Kurzweil. That really was the last nail in the coffin for this coming singularity. And I found a story out of the New York Times that I wanted to share with you. This has been queued up for quite a while. It was out of the archives from June 12th, 2010. But now that we're 7 years into the future, it's very interesting to see what they were already talking about in 2010 and what has happened so far. This story is titled, Merely Human? Well, that is so yesterday. On a Tuesday evening in the spring of 2010, Serge Brin, the co-founder of Google, became part man and part machine. About 40 people all gathered here at a NASA campus for a 9-day $15,000 course at Singularity University saw it happen, while the flesh and blood version of Mr. Brin sat miles away at a computer capable of remotely steering a robot. The Gizmodo rolling around here consisted of a printer-sized base with wheels attached to a boxy head-height screen glowing with an image of Mr. Brin's face. This Brinbot obeyed its human commander and sputtered around the room from group to group, talking to attendees about Google and other topics via a video conferencing system. The Brinbot was hardly something out of Star Trek. It had a rudimentary, no-frills design, and it was a hodgepodge of loosely integrated technologies. Yet it also smacked of a future that the Singularity University founders hold dear and often discuss with a techno-utopian bravado, the arrival of the Singularity. A time, possibly just a couple decades from now, when a superior intelligence will dominate and life will take on an altered form that we can't quite predict or comprehend in our current limited state. That statement right there should give you chills, because this is what they're planning, and this is the big boys that are in the middle of all of this technology already. At that point, the Singularity holds human beings and machines will so effortlessly and elegantly merge that poor health, the ravages of old age, and even death itself will all be a thing of the past. We've discussed this longevity medicine, these nanobots in your blood to determine whether or not you are operating within parameters and then go in and fix you the second it finds something wrong. Some of Silicon Valley's smartest and wealthiest people have embraced the Singularity, and they believe that technology may be the only way to solve the world's ills while also allowing people to seize control of the evolutionary process. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. We are self-evolving with CRISPR. They've been talking about that. Good old Georgie Porgy Church, human-directed evolution. And for those who haven't noticed, the Silicon Valley's most celebrated company, i.e. Google, works daily on building a giant brain that harnesses the thinking power of humans in order to surpass the thinking power of humans. Larry Page, Google's other co-founder, helped set up the Singularity University in 2008, and the company has supported it with more than $250,000 in donations. And some of Google's earliest employees, thanks to personal donations of $100,000 each, among the university's founding circle. The university represents the more concrete side of the Singularity and focuses on introducing entrepreneurs to promising technologies and hundreds of students worldwide apply to snare one of the 80 available spots in separate 10-week graduate courses that cost $25,000 each. Chief executives, investors, doctors, and inventors and investors jockey for admission to the more intimate 9-day course called Executive Programs. Both courses include FaceTime with leading thinkers in the areas of nanotechnology, artificial intelligence, energy, biotech, robotics, and supercomputing. And the more millennialist and provocative note, the Singularity also offers modern-day quasi-religious answer to the Fountain of Youth by affirming the notion that, yes, indeed, or at least something derived from them, humans can have it all. We will transcend the limitations of our biology, says Ray Kurzweil, the inventor and businessman who is the Singularity's most ubiquitous spokesman, and boasts that he intends to live for hundreds of years and to resurrect the dead, including his own dead father. Ding! This is what it means to be human, to extend who we are. Now remember, this is in 2010, before Ray Kurzweil ever became the director of engineering at Google. But of course, one person's utopia is another person's dystopia. We have talked about Teddy before. In the years since the Unabomber, Theodore Kaczynski violently invaded against the predations of technology. Plenty of other more sober and sophisticated warnings have arrived. There are camps of environmentalists who decry efforts to manipulate nature. Oh, those damn environmentalists. Challenges from religious groups that see the singularity as a version of Frankenstein. Oh, those damn religious groups in which people are playing being gods. Ding-a-ling. And technologists who fear a runaway artificial intelligent robots that will subjugate humans. Well, I consider myself all three of those. And a popular network television show called The Fringe playfully explores some of these concerns by featuring a mad scientist and a team of federal agents investigating crimes related to the pattern, an influx of threatening events caused by out-of-control technology like computer programs that melt brains and genetically engineered chimeras like the one they just announced yesterday between humans and pigs that go on killing sprees. Yeah, welcome to the Isle of Dr. Moreau. Some of the singularities adherents portray a future where humans break off into two species. The haves, who will have superior intelligence and who can live for hundreds of years, and the have-nots, who are hampered by their antiquated corporeal forms and beliefs. Ding, 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 ding. That's going to be us, the resistant consumers. And of course, some people will opt for inadequacy. Yes, embrace your inadequacy, people. While others will have inadequacy thrust upon them. Critics find such scenarios unnerving because the keys to the next phase of evolution may be beyond the grasp of most people. The singularity is not the great vision for society that Lenin had or Milton Friedman might have. Says Andrew Orlowski, a British journalist who has written extensively on tech utopianism. He says, quote, it is the rich people, ding, building a lifeboat and getting off the ship, unquote. How many times have I told you that? Peter Thiel, this is the guy who wants to put young blood into old people, co-founder of PayPal, an investor in Facebook, is a singularity devotee who says singularity or bust. All right, guys, have an awesome Friday.
Ozzy's kid.